and their genocide.
Okay, thank you very much. Steve Bell, activist at Stop the War Coalition for Coventry, UK. Master Shajar, a pleasure. Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from Tehran. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tapoy and the team. It's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219. From the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillahi ulaika yarjuna rahmatallah. أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. Gaza's health ministry says the situation in the northern part of the territory is extremely catastrophic and indescribable as hospitals have run out of fuel. An active-duty U.S. airman sets himself ablaze outside of the Israeli embassy to protest Washington's complicity in the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. And an international rights organization says Israel has turned a supposedly safe corridor to southern Gaza into a trap to kill displaced Palestinians. Warm welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. Thanks for joining us. Palestinians are seeing no respite from Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. The regime has carried out fresh attacks, taking the lives of more civilians. In Gaza City, Israel's drone and artillery strikes killed at least 25 Palestinians and injured a number of others. The regime forces also targeted civilians on a coastal road west of Gaza City, killing around a dozen people. The death toll from the genocide since October the 7th is close to 29,700, most of them women and children. Israel is pressing ahead with its attacks while the humanitarian situation is getting worse by the hour. Gaza's health ministry has described as extremely catastrophic the health situation in the northern parts of the Strip, where hospitals are without fuel. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees is calling for humanitarian aid to be allowed into Gaza, where people are grappling with severe shortages of food, water, and medicine. Philippe Lazzarini said the delivery of vital aid can prevent famine in the Palestinian territory. He described as a man-made disaster the dire humanitarian conditions in Gaza. The UNRWA chief added that the agency has been unable to transfer food aid to northern Gaza for over a month. In recent weeks, the UNRWA has been facing Israeli calls for its abolition. The agency's major donors suspended funding following Israel's allegations that some UNRWA staff members were involved in Palestinians' Al-Aqsa flood operation in early October. Regarding food scarcity in Gaza, the UN itself has voiced concern that almost everyone is at risk of famine. Recent days, a number of children have died from malnutrition in Gaza. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent Mutia Abu Musaba in Gaza. He said Israel is killing people who look for food, shelter, and medicine all across Gaza.
The latest Israeli attack actually targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians who were waiting for the convoys of the humanitarian relief heading to Gaza City. Dozens of the Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed and injured. It's noteworthy that this is not the first time the Israeli occupation forces targeted the Palestinian people waiting for the humanitarian aid heading to Gaza City in a way that prevents the Palestinian people to get any real access to the basic humanitarian needs. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces also maintained their attacks against Sheikh Ridwan neighborhood in the same city in Gaza City, where another group of the Palestinian civilians was targeted using the Israeli fighter drones near Sheikh Ridwan clinic. They were gathering in order to get the needed medical care. The Israeli occupation forces targeted them and killed and injured many of them. While in Zaytun neighborhood, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces are still beleaguering the neighborhood, and it's under the heavy bombardments of the Israeli airstrikes and the Israeli attacks of the Israeli tanks on the ground. Several Palestinian houses were destroyed using the explosive devices, leaving at least 10 Palestinian civilians dead over those continuous and ceaseless attacks reaching the neighborhood.
The rights group says the Israeli regime has turned a supposedly safe corridor to the Gaza Strip's south into a trap in order to kill hungry and forcibly displace Palestinians. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, Israeli troops have killed the very same Palestinians they forced to flee from Gaza City to an area in the south of the coastal sliver. Israeli forces killed them at a checkpoint in central Gaza. The regime's troops also targeted civilians waiting for aid trucks near the checkpoint. As documented by the rights organizations, Israeli forces killed 30 Palestinians waiting for relief trucks on a street southwest of Gaza City. The rights group has recorded horrific testimonies indicating Israeli tanks fired artillery shells and bullets at displaced Palestinians heading south. A U.S. service member has set himself on fire outside of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., in protest against 143 days of the regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. The video of the incident was posted on an American video streaming service. The incident lasted about a minute before law enforcement officers extinguished the flames. The man was an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force. He is reportedly in critical condition. This is the second incident of its kind outside of an Israeli facility in the U.S. since the start of the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Last week, the U.S. used its veto power for a third time to block a U.N. resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Israel has stepped up demolition of Palestinian homes in the occupied outlets since the start of the regime's devastating war against the Gaza Strip. We discussed this issue with our guests in our News Review program. Let's take a listen.
Time now for the News Review. Stay tuned. Now, figures show that Israel has been exploiting the global attention on the genocide in Gaza to ramp up demolition of Palestinian homes in the occupied Al-Quds. During the first 9 months of last year, Israel destroyed 97 Palestinian homes on the east side of the city. But since launching its deadly onslaught in Gaza in early October, Israel has bulldozed 87 homes. Now, those figures are according to Er Amim, a local nonprofit organization monitoring home demolitions in Al-Quds. Activists say that Israel is trying to drive more Palestinians out of East Al-Quds. The regime is trying to justify its much-criticized practice by claiming that its houses have been built without permits. However, it's practically made it impossible for Palestinians to obtain those documents through legal discrimination. Now let me invite two guests to this edition. Mona Kandil, our correspondent, joining me from Ramallah. Also with me is Mazen Komsia, Palestinian scientist and author in Bethlehem. Good to see you both. Mona, let's begin with you. Tell us about these home demolitions that we just talked about, and this has been going on in the past 4 or 5 months since the onslaught on Gaza started.
Unfortunately, the Israeli regime and the Israeli authorities in Al-Quds, they refuse to give Palestinians permits in order to allow them construct their homes or even expand their homes inside Al-Quds. And it's very clear they want the Palestinians out of the city of Al-Quds. At the same time, the Israeli Jewish settlers are given a green light to build the new settlements, to expand their units and build new units inside Al-Quds. So while the Palestinians are not given Israeli issued permits to construct their homes, to expand their flats and their homes, the Israelis are given more permits in order to build the new illegal Israeli settlements on the Palestinian lands in Al-Quds. As you have mentioned, the Israelis, since the in the first 9 months of 2023, 97 Palestinian homes were destroyed in Al-Quds. However, since the 7th of October, 87 homes were destroyed by the Israelis inside Al-Quds. Several days ago in Sinwan, there's Fakhri Abu Diab, this Palestinian activist and he's the spokesperson of Sinwan. His home himself was destroyed by the Israelis. He was surprised by the Israelis trying to destroy his home. And the excuse is always ready that the Palestinians' homes are being destroyed because of the lack of Israeli issued permits.
Thanks for that. Now, Mazen Gomsiyat, tell us about what the Israeli regime has on its minds and the plan. You know, it's engaged in this genocidal war in Gaza. At the same time, it has the abductions and raids against the West Bank. And simultaneously, again, we're now speaking about home demolitions that's still going on.
Yes, indeed. In 2023, what we saw is more than doubling the number of houses demolished compared to 2022. That coincided with the bringing in of the Israeli right-wing government, fascist government that decided to increase ethnic cleansing. Nearly a quarter of the homes that were demolished were actually homes built with foreign aid and local aid to replace homes that were demolished earlier, so second turn demolition. Here in the Afrin district, for example, Al Walija, they had homes demolished just in the past few days. And this continues. It's a long standing policy, but it has increased in 2023 compared to 2022, and has increased even further after October 7th. In the last 4.5 months, there were more homes demolished than 2022 put together.
All right. Thank you so much. Mona Kandil, our correspondent in Ramallah, and Mazen Gomsiyat, Palestinian scientist and author in Bethlehem.
Welcome back to the news. Thousands of pro-Palestine demonstrators have taken to the streets of the Spanish city of Barcelona to demand an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and to call on their government to sever ties with the Israeli regime.
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Today is the second day that protests have been held in more than 100 cities across the country to call for measures to stop complicity in the genocide that has been committed against Palestinian people. We demand an end to arms sales to Israel.
We fully support all those doing this demonstration, and we should stop all institutional and economic relations with Israel while the regime is being investigated by the International Court of Justice for genocide. We should stop having an arms trade with Israel.
Protesters were chanting anti-Israel slogans while waving Palestinian flags. Similar demonstrations were also held in other cities, including the capital, Madrid, in solidarity with Palestinians. Earlier, the German city of Nuremberg was the scene of pro-Palestine rallies as well. The protesters there also demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and an end to arms supplies to Israel. Anti-Israel demonstrations were also held in Austria.
On Sunday, Rotterdam, the second largest city in the Netherlands, hosted a demonstration in support of the Palestinians dubbed Hands Off Rafah, which saw the participation of thousands of people also from nearby towns and villages. The organizers of the initiative, the Rotterdam Palestine Coalition, said the demonstration had been called to draw attention to a new grave humanitarian crisis which could soon unfold in Rafah, where 1.5 million displaced Palestinians are sheltering, if Israel will attack there. Western countries are not doing anything to stop Israel, activists argued.
It's because they don't see or they did fall in the trap of the Israeli by dehumanizing the Palestinian. So now they are not treating the Palestinian as a human. And that dehumanization process, which Israel did do, most people in the world did see this entity, this occupation, Israel, on its reality, that it's an occupation, it's an apartheid system, and that the Palestinians are human, indigenous people who are fighting to get their land back.
Rotterdam has been one of the most active Dutch cities in organizing initiatives against Israeli genocide in Gaza over the past months.
The Netherlands has so far provided unconditional support to the Israeli regime. Not only did the Dutch government abstain during a United Nations vote on a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza, but it is also supplying parts for the F-35 jet fighters with which Israel has been bombing Palestinian civilians.
I feel like the Dutch government has long always supported fascism in the whole world. Imperialism, we have a long history of imperialism. And we also have a long history of supporting Israel for the same reasons I think that Germany has them. A lot of people of older generations, they are imprinted with this idea that we should be behind Israel. And we are slowly changing it.
The Netherlands is playing an important role regarding the Israeli occupation and crimes against Palestinians because it is home to the International Court of Justice. The court, based in The Hague, has been asked by the United Nations to deliver an advisory opinion on the legal consequences of the more than five-decade-long Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories. Hearing sessions are scheduled to end on Monday. Max Civili, Rotterdam.
Hundreds of Americans in the state of Michigan have staged a rally to protest Joe Biden administration's support for the Israeli onslaught in Gaza. The demonstrators vowed to cast an uncommitted ballot during the upcoming Michigan presidential primary in an act of protest.
It is just really shame and shocking that 30,000 innocent children, men and women, in the name of just whatsoever baloney and war. It's not a war. It's an ethnic cleansing. It's an ethnic cleansing in a genocide. It's a complete, you have seen, the world have seen. We don't need what the International Criminal Court Justice will say. We see on social media, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Pinster. The point is enough, end of the day, that Joe Biden failed himself. Joe Biden failed the humanity. So Muslim American community, our message, yes, indeed, February 27th in Michigan, we are voting uncommitted.
Well, I'm a Michigan resident, and of course I support Palestine. It's a human cause, and so I was glad to see all of the Hamtramck residents come out and vote, and this was really necessary for us to all do. We need to show President Biden and all the other candidates that we support Palestine. We don't support our U.S. tax dollars going towards Israel to ethnically cleanse Palestine, and this is a human cause, and so we're all showing up.
American and British fighter jets have carried out fresh strikes across Yemen in their fourth joint operation against the Arab country. There are strikes at the provinces of Sana'a, Taiz, and Hajjah. Several locations, including a pesticide factory and telecommunications networks, were targeted. This comes as the Yemeni army has targeted an American oil tanker and several warships with missiles in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. The Yemeni army says such operations will continue in response to attacks by the U.S. and the U.K., and in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Meanwhile, Iran has denounced the latest strikes on Yemen, saying that Washington and London are seeking to escalate tensions and crises in the region. Yemenis are adamant in their support for Palestine, despite the U.S. airstrikes in their country. They say that Yemen is fighting for Gaza and will not be affected by hostile acts by Israel's Western allies.
The strikes will not affect us. We are now fighting for Gaza. We will not be deterred by the strikes of the Israelis and the Americans, no matter what. We are used to war. We have been in war for 9 years. The war will not harm us. It is either we achieve victory for Palestine, or we will walk on foot to Palestine to free it from the Israelis.
Your strikes will not intimidate or scare us. We will keep on supporting Gaza with all the power that we have.
We will not be scared of the airstrikes that hit us, and we will not be frustrated. They've been striking us for 9 years, and we will not be scared. God willing, we will get victory for Gaza and Palestine.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willest, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness, for sins.
Limelight.
If killing and wounding over 100,000 Palestinians and counting is the Zionist regime's version of self-defense, then both Scholz and Biden have done a splendid job in ensuring the child killer regime of Israel has everything it needs to achieve its bloody mission. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, on February 8, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was in Washington on an official visit aimed at working jointly with the United States to make sure that Israel has what it needs to defend itself. If such a statement was made soon after the Al-Aqsa flood operation of October 7th, one may cognize its logic based on the well-known inherent bias of both Washington and Berlin towards the Zionist regime. The statement and the visit, however, were conducted on the 125th day of one of the bloodiest genocides in modern history. The purpose of the visit was highlighted in a press conference by White House spokesperson John Kirby, even though hours later U.S. President Joe Biden admitted that Israel has gone over the top in its response to the October 7th events. If killing and wounding over 100,000 civilians and counting is the Zionist regime's version of self-defense, then both Scholz and Biden have done a splendid job in ensuring the Zionist regime has everything it needs to achieve its bloody mission. However, in this context, who is entitled to self-defense? The Zionist regime or Palestine? UN General Assembly Resolution 3236 has affirmed the inalienable right of the Palestinian people in Palestine, the right to self-determination, and the right to national independence and sovereignty. The phrase Palestinian right to self-determination is perhaps the most frequently uttered phrase in relation to Palestine and the Palestinian struggle since the establishment of the UN. On January 26, the International Court of Justice also affirmed what we already know, that Palestinians are a distinct national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. Those injured Palestinian children do not need legal language or political slogans to locate themselves. The right to live without fear of extermination, without bombs, and without military occupation is a natural right, requiring no legal arguments and unfazed by racism, hate speech, or propaganda. Unfortunately, we do not live in a world of common sense, but in topsy-turvy legal and political systems that exist to only cater to the strong. In this parallel world, Scholz is more concerned about the Zionist regime being able to defend itself than a besieged Palestinian population, starving, bleeding, yet unable to achieve any tangible measure of justice. Despite this, the Zionist regime still does not have the right to defend itself. Logically, those carrying out acts of aggression should not demand that their victims refrain from fighting back. Palestinians have been victimized by Israeli colonialism, military occupation, racial apartheid, siege, and now genocide. Therefore, for the Zionist regime to invoke Article 51, chapter of the Charter of United Nations, is a mockery of international law. Article 51, often used by great powers to justify their wars and military interventions, was designed with a completely different legal spirit in mind. Article 2 of Chapter 1 in the UN Charter prohibits the threat or use of force in international relations. It also calls on all members to respect the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence of other states. Since the Zionist regime is in violation of Article 2, it simply has no right to invoke Article 51. In November 2012, Palestine was recognized as an observer state at the UN. It is also a member of countless international treaties and is recognized by 139 countries out of the 193 UN members. Even if we accept the argument that the UN Charter only applies to full UN members, the Palestinian right to self-defense can still be established. In 1960, General Assembly Declaration No. 1594 guaranteed independence to colonized nations and people. Although it did not discuss the right of the colonized to use force, it condemned the use of force against liberation movements. In 1964, the UNGA voted in favor of Resolution No. 2105, which recognized the legitimacy of the struggle of colonized nations to exercise the right to self-determination. In 1973, the Assembly passed Resolution 38/17 of 1983. The language this time was unambiguous. People have the right to struggle against colonial foreign domination by all possible means, including armed struggle. The same dynamics that ruled the UN in its early days continue to this day, where Western regimes, which represent the bulk of all colonial powers in the past, continue to give themselves monopoly over the use of force. Conversely, the Global South, which has suffered under the yoke of those Western regimes, insists that it too has the right to defend itself against foreign intervention, colonialism, military occupation, and apartheid. While Scholz was in Washington to discuss yet more ways to kill Palestinian civilians, the country of Nicaragua made an official request to join South Africa in its effort to hold the Zionist regime accountable for the crime of genocide in Gaza. The Global South is again rising in solidarity with the Palestinians, while the North, with a few exceptions, continues to support Israeli regime oppression.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In this week's show, we'll be shining a light on the influence of an ultra-Zionist sect known as Chabad. On its website, it claims to be, and I quote, the most dynamic force in Jewish life today. It's certainly true that this extremist faction wields significant influence over Israel's genocidal military and its leading politicians too, as Latifa Abu Chakra will explain in this report.
In December, in Beit Hanun, in northern Gaza, a Jewish religious outpost was established in a partially destroyed building. This was described as the first Chabad house in Gaza. Chabad is an ultra-Orthodox Jewish sect. It has many adherents in the genocidal occupation forces, many of whom wear Chabad patches on their uniforms. Here is a Zionist tank flying the distinctive Chabad flag in Gaza. In addition, there are Chabad rabbis attached to the occupation forces. One notes that the genocide is actually about rooting out evil. Here, two Chabad rabbis erected the Jewish religious symbol, the menorah, in Gaza. But what is Chabad? It styles itself as a friendly, outgoing movement dedicated to helping Jews reconnect with Judaism. In reality, it is a Jewish supremacist sect. In the past, it was anti-Zionist, but back then, even as far back as 1929, its adherents in El Khalil, or Hebron, as it's called by the Zionists, were involved in spying on the Palestinians for the Haganah terror militia, as well as storing weapons for them. Chabad is now so ultra-Zionist that it called in December for Gaza to be recolonized with Jewish settlers. Worse, Israeli paper Haaretz reports its adherents believe, as laid out in the Tanya. Chabad's key religious text states that Gentiles have only animal souls, not human souls. In January this year, the Tanya was printed out by occupation forces in Gaza. This supremacism is carried over into its attitude to the Palestinians. Followers of a Chabad Rabbi Yitzhak Ginzburg are known as the Hilltop Youth. Two of his followers wrote the hugely controversial King's Torah, which was also recommended by Ginzburg. The book states that it is permissible to kill Palestinian children, even babies. There is justification for killing babies if it is clear that they will grow up to harm us. And in such a situation, they may be harmed deliberately, and not only during combat with adults. It's not just words. Ginzburg's followers in the so-called Hilltop Youth are said by the Zionist intelligence agency Shin Bet to be responsible for most price tag revenge attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank. In 1988, Benjamin Netanyahu famously met with the leader of Chabad in New York, where the sect has its global HQ. Netanyahu has maintained a relationship with Chabad ever since. Here he is addressing them in 2014. These are the forces supported and aided by the US and the UK, unleashed as part of the genocide in Gaza.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Joining us again as our guest contributor today is Amar Kazmi. Amar is an anti-imperialist political activist and a commentator. He previously worked on Jeremy Corbyn's 2016 leadership campaign and was a political advisor in my parliamentary office from 2017 to 2019. Welcome to the show. David, you know, Latifa's report there showed that Chabad is deeply embedded in the genocide being conducted by the Zionist entity. I mean, does that strike you as odd for a group that used to be anti-Zionist?
Well, this is an anti-Zionist group, which was always really
pro-Zionist. It's a curious thing. So although it was formally anti-Zionist up until 1967, it was only after 1967 they formally made their kind of peace with Zionism. But back in 1929 in Hebron, they actually stored Haganah weapons in the bank belonging to one of the Hamad followers, and they were engaged in spying on the local Palestinians and passing the information over to the nascent Mossad, prior to the creation of the State of Israel. So they've been anti-Zionists who have been collaborating with and using Zionism in order to further the settlement activities which they approved of.
Yeah. Well, Amar, I mean, this group calling for the recolonization of Gaza, I mean, appears to be ultra-Zionist, doesn't it?
Well, certainly, and David just ran through some of the history there. I mean, they did formally at one point oppose the creation of the State of Israel, but this is a thoroughly ultra-Zionist sect. I mean, they believe, Zionism is so fanatical that they believe that the current Israeli state has no real authority against them. They oppose any sort of peace deals. And in the most recent offensive on Gaza, the genocide that's been perpetrated against Gaza, they've had the audacity to set up a Chabad house in the Gaza Strip in December of last year. So this is a thoroughly pro-Zionist organization that's deeply involved and embedded in not just supporting it in terms of words and in terms of ideology, but also materially in terms of fundraising and lobbying.
Well, David, I mean, obviously you've touched on this already, but I just wonder whether you could perhaps explain how this group, along with many other Hasidic groups, I mean, used to be anti-Zionist.
Well, if you listen to Natura Carta, which is the militant anti-Zionist Hasidic group, they say routinely, if you listen to their talks, in 1947, the chief rabbi of Jerusalem said we should not have a Jewish state. And that was the position of almost all the Hasidic sects at the time. Mm. Now, what's happened since then is that they've made their peace with the Zionists. Now, in the case of Chabad, for example, they have a written agreement with the IDF that when they join the IDF, that 25% of the guys who join the IDF can go off to yeshivas for a year, maybe in New York or somewhere, one of their other worldwide offices, whereas some of the other Hasidic groups are still sufficiently anti-Zionist that they refuse to allow their children when they reach 18 to serve in the IDF. But nevertheless, and so there's an ongoing process there where the IDF are trying to encourage them to join, and they have throughout the West Bank and the illegal settlements, they have these what are known as IDF yeshivas, where they're allowed to go and do Torah study. And then they also have to go and kill a few Palestinians on the weekend. So it's that kind of arrangement. And that's how it works. And that's what's compromised almost all of the Hasidic sects now. There's only one, the Satmar, which is quite a large one, which remains formally anti-Zionist. Mm. But it's been a process from really the 1930s to today of compromising that anti-Zionism and bringing the kind of ultra-Zionism of the Hasidic sects into the service of the Zionist entity.
Amara, Latifa mentioned in the report there about the so-called price tag attacks, which are associated with this group. Arnie, just say a word or two about that, will you?
Well, these price tag attacks are essentially revenge attacks against Palestinians who are involved or perceived to have been involved in acts of resistance against the Zionist regime. We often hear in the West that these are these extremist settlers acting sort of their own volition, but actually they act as an extension of the Israeli regime, as militias for them. They're essentially completely unaccountable. They have total impunity. Often they're actually aided and abetted by the IDF in the West Bank. And the Israeli intelligence agency Shin Bet has said that the vast majority of these people involved in these attacks are linked to this extremist faction based in the Yitzhar settlement. In particular, there's actually a Chabad-linked yeshiva, a Jewish seminary, in that settlement. So we see that it's really these individuals who are involved in it, but of course they're completely supported by the Israeli regime.
Mm. And David, what about this King's Torah's justification for killing Palestinian babies? What's that about?
Well, I mean, when you read this for the first time, you think, can this be true? But when you look back at it, their actual main theological tome, the Tanya, describes Gentiles as being having husks for souls, and they have animal souls, they're not fully human. And of course, it's a small step from deciding that to say, well, actually, in that case, you can you can kill children who are not Jewish. And in the case of Palestinians, the key question is, will they grow up to challenge us in the future? Of course, something which you can't tell about it. A baby, but nevertheless, they can tell, and they can tell that any Palestinian baby is a threat to them in the future, and they can be engaged regardless of whether you're trying to kill their parents or not. You can just kill the babies by themselves. And this is the depth of the horror of the philosophy and the ideas of this sect. And of course, we see that enacted every day in Gaza today and tomorrow and yesterday. And that's what's been going on here. This is the ideological justification for the direct killing and assassination. Sometimes we've seen through by Israeli snipers direct shots through the head of children. And this is the ideological justification.
Yeah, incredible. Well, Amar, I mean, Netanyahu has been a prominent and very long-term presence in the Zionist power structure. I mean, just say a little, will you, though, about his connection with the Chabad.
Well, you know, if you look at Netanyahu and his sort of family background, it's quite clear that he has a very long-term connection with sort of, you know, the revisionist Zionist movement in general. His father was an aide to Jabotinsky. Mm. After Jabotinsky died, you know, Netanyahu's father continued to work on the revisionist Zionist movement. You know, in a hostage recovery raid in the 1970s, Netanyahu was injured. His brother Jonathan was killed, and afterwards, Netanyahu set up an institute called the Jonathan Foundation, the Jonathan Institute, which helps to research, you know, so-called terrorism, and helped to sort of give birth in the mid 1980s to this idea of Islamic terrorism.
Right.
And you know, so in terms of promoting these sorts of ideas and being associated with Zionist extremism, and also being associated with Chabad, this is something that Netanyahu has been associated with for many, many decades.
Right. Well, we'll come back to the discussion in a moment after our second report, which looks at the worldwide distribution of Chabad offices, its links to literal Nazis, and its deplorable fundraising activities.
In December, it was revealed that a Chabad group in the UK was fundraising to support the genocide in Gaza. Rabbi Aryeh Sufrin of Chabad claimed back in October that Hamas is worse than ISIS, in full conformity with Zionist entity talking points. He also disclosed that his son is a British recruit to the occupation forces and was in occupied Palestine at the time. The Chabad appeal read, "Vital equipment needed by the IDF. Funds raised will go direct to equipment needed by Aaron Dov Sufrin's reserve unit up in the north of Israel and support units." Aaron Dov Sufrin is, of course, the son of the rabbi, serving actively in the genocidal occupation forces. Chabad Lubavitch is an ultra-Orthodox Hasidic sect which also happens to be a genocidal cult. It originates in Lubavitchy in Russia near the border with Belarus. It's a global movement with more than 5,000 offices in over 100 countries and in all 50 states of the US. It even has offices in seemingly unlikely places like China, Belarus, Tunisia, Morocco, and Venezuela. It has prominent supporters in many places. The new Argentinian president is a Chabad devotee. Donald Trump even donated to Chabad, though not as much as his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who has played a pivotal role in the normalization of the Zionist entity. Obviously, Chabad has been highly organized in Ukraine, and Chabad followers were amongst those recruited in the Nazi Azov Battalion, which we should remember was co-founded by a former member of the Israeli occupation forces. Palestine Declassified previously reported on how Ukrainian Jewish oligarch Igor Kolomoisky bankrolled Chabad in Ukraine as well as the Nazi Azov and IDA battalions. Back in the UK, there are more than 100 Chabad groups or offices. It flies under the radar and is widely regarded as well-meaning, if a little eccentric. In reality, it is an extremist group which is building support for genocide in the UK. Ironically, the Community Security Trust has aided Chabad, giving them security advice after an edition of Palestine Declassified exposed some of their activities. The CST has educating about extremism as one of its charitable objectives, but it is unwilling to educate us about the extremism of Chabad. There's a very good reason for that. Gerald Ronson, which created and runs the CST, is himself an extremist and has been supporting Chabad for more than half a century. Here he is in 2013 as a guest of honour at one of their events.
Chabad Lubavitch UK Ambassador's Award presented to Gerald Ronson CBE and Dame Gail Ronson for their friendship and support over four decades.
Zionist extremists are widely distributed in the UK and form a mutually supportive network. This is a key element of the justification and support for genocide in the UK.
Amar, I suspect a lot of people in this country would be absolutely shocked that a British Chabad group is raising funds for the Zionist occupation forces. I mean, a British Chabad group is doing that. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it?
Well, I mean, people, I think, would be shocked to find out that this organisation has, you know, roughly around 100 branches across the entirety of the UK, has 1,000 branches in the United States, at least one in every single state, has, I think, about 5,000 branches worldwide. This is an incredibly large organisation that wields a significant amount of power in terms of its lobbying capacities and its fundraising capacities. And it's really never spoken about publicly, despite the amount of influence that it has. And, of course, it poses as this very innocent, you know, well-meaning organization. But then we see that it's raising funds for the Israel occupation forces. It's 100% ideologically behind the genocide against the people of Gaza. As we heard earlier in the program, you know, that we have statements saying that it's legitimate to kill Palestinian babies. I mean, I think if people in Britain actually understood what this organization was, the sort of depth that it has in Britain, they'd be deeply, deeply shocked.
Well, it's certainly got some reach, hasn't it, David? I mean, in 100 countries. But I was pleased to say that I don't believe they've got any base in Cuba. I mean, is that right?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. There are bases in Venezuela, in revolutionary Venezuela. They have branches in Beijing and Shanghai and other places in China. Many branches in Russia, too, as you perhaps wouldn't expect. In Cuba, there isn't an official base there, no. But they do have a foothold. They have a follower there who acts as if they are a Chabad house in Havana, but they haven't formally got an office there. That's because, of course, the Communist Party has not allowed that, which is a good thing too. But they have spread over 100 countries. I mean, it's truly extraordinary. That's many more countries than have a formal Zionist presence by the Zionist movement itself, which is around about 35 or 40 countries. But nevertheless, this is an ultra-Zionist group spreading ultra-Zionist messages all around 100 countries. It's a truly extraordinary reach for an organisation. And it flies so far under the radar that hardly anyone's even heard of it.
Mm. Well, hopefully we hope to shed a bit of light on them. But Amar, I mean, wonder what you could say a word or two about Jared Kushner and his role in the normalisation process.
Yes, I mean, Jared Kushner, firstly, is someone who is very close to Chabad. He's personally donated thousands of dollars to Chabad, and during the Trump regime, he was given this sort of informal role to promote normalisation in the Gulf. We saw him as a very prominent public figure in the so-called Abraham Accords in 2020, in which Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates formalised publicly the sort of diplomatic relationship they'd already been secretly having with Israel, but formally normalised with Israel. And Kushner was very involved in that, also in Morocco, and of course as well in terms of lobbying the Saudi oligarchy, which was very close to reaching a normalisation agreement with Israel before the events of the 7th of October last year. And, you know, after leaving the White House, I believe a hedge fund associated with him received $2 billion US dollars from the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund. So this is someone who's been deeply involved in that process and is closely linked to Chabad. Yeah.
Well, I mean, another sort of extraordinary revelation relating to this organisation, David, is that a number of them have apparently signed up to fight in the Nazi Azov battalion in Ukraine. I mean, can that really be true?
Well, I'm afraid it is true, Chris. I mean, the thing that you've got to understand about Chabad in Ukraine is that in the UK and in the US, there's an official Zionist movement, and then there's Chabad. And the official Zionist movement mainly runs the organised Jewish community. In Ukraine, the organised Jewish community is mainly run by Chabad. And that's true, actually, also in Russia. And so what you see is that when Kolomoisky, the oligarch, the Ukrainian oligarch, who I think we can talk about a little bit later, when he is involved in funding something like Chabad, he's also involved in funding Azov and the Idar battalions. And what you see then is that you saw in the film that there are photographs from Zionist papers of Chabad followers joining up to fight the Russians. And of course, some of these are joining up with the Azov battalion. Incredible.
Well, it is incredible. I mean, and I wonder what you make of that, Amar. I mean, David mentioned there that Igor Kolomoisky involved in funding the Azov battalion and a huge Chabad community in Dnipro as well. I mean, this is amazing, isn't it?
Yes, well, I mean, you know, Kolomoisky is, of course, this fantastically rich oligarch, maybe not so much anymore after being sanctioned and having some of his funds taken away from him in London as well, you know. But he's this rich oligarch with, you know, Cypriot Israeli citizenship. And after the 2014 Maidan coup in Ukraine, he was given control of the Dnipro Oblast, which is, you know, a very strategically important region in southeastern Ukraine. And he helped to develop and create several armed militias. He helped to support, as we just heard, financially, the Nazi-linked or neo-Nazi, you could even say ideologically, Azov and Ada battalions.
Yeah.
And, you know, as well as that, he's also helped to fund Chabad extensively, helped to fund a Chabad Jewish community center, which is said to be the largest in the world. But this is a deeply nefarious figure, deeply corrupt individual. You know, he is actually wanted by the U.S. Justice Department. He and his family can't travel there. He was actually put in pre-trial detention in Ukraine very recently on charges of money laundering and fraud. So this is someone who's used his wealth, got it in nefarious ways potentially, and has used it to help support this movement.
Another interesting funder, David, of course, is Gerald Ronson, isn't it? I mean, the guy who runs the Zionist Community Security Trust, which, you know, is adjacent to or works with Mossad. I mean, this is the organisation that claims that anti-Semitism is skyrocketing. I mean, what do you make of all that?
So their most recent report on the skyrocketing nature of anti-Semitism, you know, of course, counts people shouting Free Palestine as being an indication of anti-Semitism, shows the utter bankruptcy of their research. But we should also be looking much more closely at Ronson's charitable ventures, which of course have been involved for more than 50 years now in supporting Chabad, this extremist group. The CST says in its charitable objectives that it's supposed to educate the public about extremism, but they won't be doing any educating at all about Chabad, because they don't regard the extremism of Chabad as being extremism at all. And that indicates the deep rot at the heart of the CST, an organisation which gets some 15 million a year from the Home Office, and I think he's also got an extra 3 million on top after October the 7th from our dearly departed Home Secretary Suella Braverman. So this is a deeply, deeply corrupt organisation engaged in promoting effectively anti-Palestinian racism on a daily basis.
I mean, and you know, Gerald Ronson's involvement is rather curious, to say the least, isn't it? I mean,
this is the guy who was, remember, he was put in jail for fraud as part of the Guinness fraud scandal, and he in his autobiography he bangs on about radical Islam and all various Islamophobic stuff in his book, and this is an organisation we're supposed to, the public is supposed to trust in dealing with anti-Semitism.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm afraid we are out of time again, so let me thank our guest Amar Kazmi and, of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Palestine Declassified will be back next week with more forensic investigations and analysis. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Iranian political factions campaign for parliamentary seats. At the time of every election in the Islamic Republic of Iran, the enemies of the Islamic Republic usually repeat the same threadbare words and terms to shape the Iranian public opinion, to pursue their own vested interests. Words such as monopoly, hard line, one party are just a few of the words which indicate the depth of hostility and spite of ill-wishers of Iran. They intend to show that elections are manipulated in Iran and certain candidates have already been appointed and elections are ceremonial in nature and people's vote have no role in the election of candidates. However, the results of elections for the past 45 years evidently proves that all factions and all individuals are free to participate in the elections as candidates and people are free to vote to whomever they wish. The 12th round of elections in the Iranian parliament, the Majlis, and the 6th round of elections for the Assembly of Experts will be held on 1st of March 2024. After finishing the examining the past record of nominees, the qualification of over 15,200 people was approved by the Iranian parliament, the Majlis, by the Guardian Council. In other words, nearly 75% of volunteers were accepted to compete for 270 seats in the Majlis. This number has been unprecedented in Iran. 61,172,298 Iranians are eligible to vote this year. As for the Assembly of Experts election, 144 candidates will compete for 86 seats. There are approximately 59,000 ballot boxes. For the first time, the Islamic Republic of Iran's Broadcasting, or IRIB,